of a paper in the Delaware Valley, asked their reporters to come down and talk to me and said, why is Biden so concerned about Bosnia and not about Haiti? Is it because blacks are involved in Haiti? Blacks are what at stake in Haiti, and in Bosnia they are Europeans, whites. There is major arsenals of nuclear weapons where they have long histories of national wars where ethnicity dominates. That is a phenomenal potential consequence of the United States. If Haiti, a god-awful thing to say, if Haiti just quietly sunk into the Caribbean or rose up 300 feet, it wouldn't matter a whole lot in terms of our interest.
But doesn't the world and
that is your president, Joe Biden. In 1994 on Charlie Rose's show, talking about Haiti. Today we have a special guest that's going to tell us about what's going on in Haiti right now. I'm sure people have seen in the news. But before we get to that, let me introduce my co-host, my dog, Pascal Robert.
What's going on, Brother Jason, comrade? Peace and greetings to you. How you living, brother?
I'm doing all right. And I know people might not know, but this episode is also probably is a little special for you because you are of Haitian descent.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm Haitian American. My parents are from Haiti and immigrated here in the 60s. I was born here, but I've done several writings and articles about Haiti. But I'm glad today we have someone who is on the ground in the activist core to talk to us about the politics of what's actually going on in Haiti today.
And do you want to introduce our guest?
Yes, today we have brother comrade Daoud André of the organization Como Koda, which is a coalition against dictatorship in Haiti, longtime Haiti activist who's been on the ground from Brooklyn, New York, who's going to talk to us about the situation where you have the current Haitian president, Jovenel Moïse, who was claiming that he has another one-year term in his administration and will not relinquish until 2022. But according to the interpretation of the Haitian opposition, he should be relinquishing his presidency this year. There are allegations that he is trying to change the constitution undemocratically. He's ruling by fiat. The parliament has basically been evacuated, and that he is marshaling secret police, which in the consciousness of Haitian people, going back to the perilous eras of Papa Doc and the Tonton Macoute secret police, is something that reigns seriously in their consciousness. So we're going to have Brother Daoud. Brother Daoud, thank you for coming on This Is Revolution. I hope you can hear us. Can you hear us, Brother Daoud?
Yes, I can hear you. I want to thank you for the invite, Brother Pascal. I want to thank our host as well. And I'm happy to be here to speak to your audience.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. So I would like you, first of all, for you to put the current situation in Haiti in context in terms of how did we get to the situation currently where we have President Jovenel Moïse, who is contesting the Constitution and has an opposition in terms of people demanding his removal. What exactly is going on the ground in Haiti? And can you give us a synopsis of the political reality?
Well, some people, as you said, some in the opposition believe that Jovenel's mandate is up. And as a matter of fact, if you go by what's actually in the Constitution and the electoral rules that he was supposedly elected under, yes, his mandate ended Sunday, February 7th. But for many of us, Jovenel Moïse is an illegitimate president. He's someone who never really had a mandate from the Haitian people. Now, the estimates are that it's about 12 million people, the population of Haiti. And the Electoral Council, after a first fraudulent election in 2015 and another one in 2016, they said that it's 550,000 votes that Jovenel Moïse received. Now, you know, is something an example that I take with some people. If there are 10 of us in a room and there's something for us to decide on, and only three of the people in that room decide to vote on this issue, and the other seven people say, you know, we don't agree with this, we are not participating in the sham, you cannot say that this is something that is legitimate, that this vote of three people binds the other seven people in this room. So it's kind of like something like this. So we have to say that it's not, you know, Jovenel Moïse or the PHTK party, that's the party. It's called the Parti Haïtien Tête Calée. It's like bald head party. It's something that means nothing, basically. And it's a vulgar connotation, as a matter of fact. And there is an interesting article in the publication, online publication, that is Aibo Post this week, that is, it has an article about what is PHTK. Because throughout the history of Haiti, you know, since, you know, it became a so-called republic, 1806, with Alexandre Pétion, eh bien, you've had political parties, different political parties, but all of the names have had something to do with the National Party, you know, Party for Progress, Party for Liberation, Party for the People, something that means something. So this article, and I agree with that, is in a way to completely bring our reality as a people, our vision, to nothingness, to garbage. And this party came from Michel Martelly. Michel Martelly is someone who was handpicked by the Clintons in 2010, the year of the earthquake, to be placed as the president of the country. Of course, so many people, the other political parties, the president of the country at the time, you know, thought that, yeah, you know, who is Michel Martelly? What has Michel Martelly done for the country? We knew Michel Martelly as a musician, goes by the stage name of Sweet Mickey, someone who spoke about using crack cocaine, someone who wears women's underwear while performing, someone who uses very, very vulgar language, spoke about the majority of the Haitian people as garbage, people who smell. He spoke about Haiti as, you know, the shithole, you know? And there is an actual video recording of him that is still on YouTube of him saying, you know, that why would anyone die for Haiti? This place is a place of garbage. And he actually said that, you know, he's not Haitian. He's a Italian. He's a half jokingly is saying these things. That's the historical record. But this is not someone who's ever been involved in working on behalf of the people of Haiti or encouraging development, encouraging progress, encouraging upliftment of the Haitian people. Rather, this is someone who has been an example of garbage to the Haitian people. As a matter of fact, he calls himself a Shawoy. This is like filth. That's what Shawoy means. It's filth. And that filthiness is what makes him money. This is his history. But anyway, this was the stooge that the Clintons felt the year of the earthquake when they had stolen so much money. We identify about $6 billion through the CIRH, that's the Haiti Reconstruction Commission, that was created at the United Nations in March of 2010. The earthquake happened January 12, 2010, and 2 months later, basically, the UN did this thing, and they to have a central body to collect money from governments around the world who wanted to help Haiti rebuild after the earthquake. The president of Haiti, René Préval, and countries in the Caribbean, CARICOM, they had decided to choose P.J. Patterson to head this committee. But Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State at the time, practically imposed Bill Clinton as the head of the CIRH. $13 billion was promised, and of that, about $6 billion came in. So, of course, the money was stolen, kickbacks, however, and the Clintons, they found other ways to steal money from the Haiti Reconstruction. So there is the Clinton Foundation itself, certainly, that while you had the CIRH, you had government. This is basically governments, corporations who wanted favors from the Secretary of State of the United States, who would give money to the Clinton Foundation, supposedly to help Haiti. But of course, nothing made its way to Haiti. Now, again, there is the State Department, what is called the USAID. All USAID money is controlled by the Secretary of State. And who is the Secretary of State? Hillary Clinton. And there was something also called the Clinton-Bush Fund that our dear brother, Barack Obama, you know, he created. He told the American public, if you want to support Haiti, give money through the Clinton-Bush Fund. And this was headed by Bill Clinton and George Bush. That's the younger Bush. So for funnels, that money was going to the Clintons. So this is the reality. And when the election was supposed to happen, but President Préval at the time, other people in Haiti, they said, well, in the middle of this, you know, over 300,000 people died. The capital is in shambles. It's not possible to have an election. But they insisted. The Clintons, the U.S. government, Barack Obama, insisted that there must be an election. And, you know, this is the power, the might of the United States. So there was no way that President Préval could resist this. So the election happened. And Martelly, we are told now that he was, there is a person who was working for the OAS at the time, Ricardo Seitenfuss, a Brazilian intellectual, who, you know, he's written a lot about this after the fact, and there's a film also by Raul Peck that is called Fatal Assistance, that you can tell, you can see the story of this election, where clearly Martelly was at, you know, he was like number five, something like this, in the number of people who got votes. But Hillary Clinton, the U.S. government, insisted that Martelly be pushed as one of the two candidates who would go to a second round. President Préval said, okay, well, if you say the election was not good, let's do it over. And they said, no, we're not going to do it over. we're just going to have Martin Lee go to the second round. So a lot of frustration. President Prevail, in you know, he says, well, why have an election if you already have your results? And it, basically, this is the story of how Martin Lee came to power, fraudulently imposed on the Haitian people by the U.S. government. And he propped up his regime. Barack Obama embraced him. Joe Biden embraced him. And in the process, to have another election in 2015, again, the United States he props up PHTK for the continuation of PHTK with Jovenel Moïse. And some people might say, what does the U.S. get out of this? Well, among the things that they got, Hillary Clinton's brother, Anthony Rodham, got a gold mine. You know, they said they found $20 billion in gold in Haiti, in the northeast of Haiti. Well, this company who had on its board Anthony Rodham, it's called VCS Mining. Well, they got a very lucrative contract. When I say lucrative, I mean, I don't mean lucrative. It's like out of every $100 that VCS Mining itself, it says that it finds in Haiti, they would keep $97.50, and poor, poor Haiti would get $2.50. That's just one of the, and they call it the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
Well, this is fascinating, right? Because what you're telling me is that we have a current president in Haiti, Jovenel Moïse, who comes to power out of an illegitimate election where you have de minimis participation of the Haitian people. The prior president, who actually basically lifted and chooses Moïse, was handpicked by the Clinton administration. And the irony of this is that, and we have the video in 1994 of Joe Biden talking about, well, if Haiti fell into the sea, it wouldn't matter to the United States. But yet the irony of this is that for the last 25 years, at least, I can remember prior to that, even going back to Aristide, the United States has been intimately involved in the political affairs of Haiti, negotiating control of who would rise, orchestrating coups, extrapolating wealth through the Clinton Global Initiative, depreciating rice production, having presidents sign, you know, economic pacts to extract wealth from the reason, from the country. Yet this is supposed to be perceived as the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Yet since the 90s, the United States has been particularly involved in all of these mechanisms of economic extraction from the country. So I'd like you to explain to our audience, Brother Dawood Andre, is that what exactly is this, you know, what exactly is the nature of this relationship with Haiti, which is supposed to be this poor country that allows all of these political figures from the United States to constantly use it as a means of extracting resources?
Well, there's been no time, I can say, history of Haiti that the United States has not been interfering in the reality of Haiti. Now, see, I know you've spoken a lot, and I'm sure your audience must know the history of Haiti, where our ancestors, they organized and they fought, and they won militarily independence against the French. After Napoleon's army, the biggest army at the time, 1804, but they also defeated the Spaniards. They also defeated the British in this path to become an independent country. And the United States supported, the French to help them keep this colony. You've written also about the Louisiana Purchase. You've spoken about that, how this basically doubles the territory of the United States in 1803 as a result of this fight, this battle, war that Napoleon Bonaparte was losing. For the United States, the main issue, and not just the United States, the colonial powers, the slave holding European countries of the time, well, they had to destroy this island. They had to destroy this project. They could not allow it to be an example. Our brother Mumia Abu-Jamal has a clip where he speaks about Haiti, about the independence of Haiti, about Black August, the Bois Caïma, the launch of our revolution in 1791, where he says Africans in chains all over the Americas, from Brazil to, to New York, from wherever, they looked towards Haiti and they dreamed. They dreamt of freedom. They dreamt of this liberation that happened in Haiti. And they smiled when they thought about their brothers, their sisters on this island. And in our constitution, a first constitution of our country, May 20th, 1805, it is Jean-Jacques Dessalines states clearly that any enslaved Black person, any indigenous person who sets foot on this land, you are not just immediately free, but you are a Haitian citizen. And the government of Haiti will fight to the last soldier to protect your freedom. So this is the threat that Haiti represented to the United States, the nearest colonial neighbor, slaveholding neighbor here. And this is why Joe Biden knows that he's lying in this clip. You know, this is why the United States does not recognize the independence of Haiti until the Civil War over here with Abraham Lincoln, because as one of their senators said, how can we have slaves in Washington, D.C., building Washington, D.C., and have Black diplomats walking around in Washington, D.C.? What kind of example is this? And so this is the U.S. invades Haiti in 1915. After years and, you know, decades of shenanigans, plotting with traitors to our country, coup d'etats, you know, all kind of shenanigans. And during what they call the First World War, you know, they invade Haiti. And they stay there for 19 years. And of course, Joe Biden knows this. So Joe Biden knows that, you know, Haiti is of utmost interest to the United States. And this is why they have plotted to destroy this project. The embargo, this is the country that have endured the longest embargo, you know, in the history of this America is over here, because our ancestors, they dared to fight and they dared to win and to create this independent, this free country for African people who were in chains everywhere else. And and this project, it continues, you know, it continues with the Duvalier regime, for example, that the people over here speak about the brutality, the cruelty of Papa Doc, François Duvalier, the Tonton Macoute, they speak about, you know, the brutality of it, but it's backed up by the United States. And the United States supported François Duvalier throughout. When François Duvalier creates the first of all, when he declares himself president for life, the United States goes to prop it up, just like they're saying right now that Jovenel Moïse's mandate will end in 2022, not 2021. Why? Because, you know, you had the Cuban Revolution, you had this threat of communism, and for them, Duvalier, François Duvalier, Jean-Claude Duvalier was a guarantee against communism, against the airing of views that were anti the politics of the United States. So, when 29 years after this regime is in power, finally the people found the means to get rid of the Duvaliers, it is the United States that comes with a plane to take him out because he was doing their bidding. So right now, this is the reason. You had this clown puppet, Jovenel Moïse, who, despite the long relationship between Venezuela, between Simon Bolivar and Haiti, well, Francisco Miranda, who in 1805, he went to Haiti and Dessalines gave him aid to liberate South America. One demand, we have to say, that the Haitians asked Dessalines and later Alexandre Pétion, is that wherever you liberate, you must end slavery there. That was the only demand. And Haiti gave guns, they gave money, they gave boats, ships, they gave soldiers to go and fight. You understand? And so, and strategy. Yeah.
So in the proper context that you're explaining here, and I say this as someone familiar with the history, is that we have a country that was intimately involved in the liberation of several nations in South America and helped the expansion of the United States and North America. Because it is a black republic, all it has been receiving is punishment to those efforts because it was an offense to the slave-owning mechanism by which America was elevating itself economically. And American politics has never allowed Haiti to experience success from that experiment from 1804.
I have a clip I wanted to play you guys, and I wanted to hear what you guys have to say about this clip I found of Hillary Clinton actually talking about Haiti, and this is right after the earthquake. So I'm going to play this real quick for you guys. Look at that hair, by the way. She's definitely going to report you guys to the manager.
Hillary Rodham Clinton, who is coordinating the relief efforts in Haiti. Good morning, Madam Secretary.
Good morning, Maggie.
We have heard all morning long from people in Haiti who just want help, and they're frustrated that it has been slow in arriving. We've also heard about the many U.S. resources that have been deployed to Haiti. Can you tell the people there and their relatives watching here in this country when you expect these resources will start to make a difference there?
Well, they already are. The president ordered a swift, coordinated, aggressive response, and that's exactly what we've been doing. But let me just give you a sense of what we're up against. The airport lost its air traffic control system, and of course it was damaged. In order to get the airport up and going so we can land the kind of heavy planes with the massive amounts of aid that is needed, we had to send in a military team to get the airport running. That has been accomplished. You heard about how the port has been damaged. That is a big problem because that prevents us from getting our ships in. We have a team working on that. We also have our crack search and rescue teams from FEMA and USAID, from Fairfax County, from Miami-Dade, from LA. They're already there on the ground. The Fairfax County team has been working. We've got the 82nd Airborne coming in. The Coast Guard has been magnificent. You know, the depth of it and the extent of it is just unimaginable, as Katie and others are telling you. And depending upon where you are, you may or may not see the results of this coordinated effort. But we're working closely with the Haitian government. The president was safe, but many parts of his government are unaccounted for. They have no communication system. We're bringing the communication system so they can start to talk to one another. We're working with the United Nations, which was responsible for coordinating aid, which, as you know, has been devastated with an enormous loss of life. Yeah. So I think the American people can be assured that we're doing everything we can to help the people of Haiti. And it's not just for the, you know, days ahead with the terrible crisis of search and rescue. It'll be for months and years ahead as we help them rebuild.
I know you've also been successful in getting.
That's enough. I think we've heard enough. and I know you hit on a lot of this, Brother Andre, earlier on, but I kind of wanted to show so we can give it some context for people that don't remember the earthquake in 2010 and how much money it actually raised. I mean, there was a huge story that came out. Francis, Sister Francis actually was talking about it, reading the minutes of the meetings on how much they were spending on flashlights and all these other things. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they never built the homes that they said they were going to build all these refugees, and they just kind of left the models up, right?
Absolutely. And you know what happened when the earthquake happened? It's interesting. During this time, basically, you know, Cuba sent 5,000 doctors, and Obama sent 22,000 soldiers with big machine guns, and everywhere you went, you know, it was so sad. You see, like, poor women, and they would only give the sacks of rice to women. They wouldn't allow the men to come. And the soldiers are manning the lines, machine guns, you know, like a bottle of water and a sack of rice. So the poor woman had to carry this thing on her head across the street, and then the man can from there, you know, help out. But at the time she's talking there, the United States, immediately the day of the earthquake, and in Raymond Joseph's book, he's a U.S. puppet who was ambassador to Washington at the time, he says in his book, For Whom the Dog Spy, he says that he is the one, when he could not reach the president or the minister of foreign affairs, the prime minister, he's the one who authorized for the United States to take over the airport and communications in Haiti. Interesting, right? But what the U.S. did is they locked down the airport. For days, weeks, they locked down the airport. So they were saying that because they were doing so much to help our people that, you know, they couldn't allow a plane load of doctors from, I don't remember which country, but Doctors Without Borders to land. Yeah. And while they wouldn't allow aid to land in Haiti, people like our group, we work with Haitian Women for Haitian Refugees and Sonia Pierre and Muda to go through the Dominican Republic to bring whatever support. But they locked down the airport. Aid could not come through the airport, but they were bringing in actors, celebrities for photo ops. You understand?
I didn't know that. Pascal, did you know about this too?
No, I didn't know about this particular detail.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
This is what was going on, like, the week of the earthquake. And it was so sad that this is what was happening. And when the U.S., you know, firefighters, things like that, they went straight to the Hotel Montana. This is where the UN, the minister at the time, they had their, you know, VIPs, you know.
Now, there was also talk of, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to cut you off, and I apologize. There was also talk of like rampant prostitution that that Oxfam was running while they were there.
Well, this happens in every country that has, you know, missionaries, NGOs.
Missionaries.
You know, that's what they do, you know. It's like, but to go back to that prior issue, is the earthquake was really an example of what Naomi Klein, you know, in her book, The Shock Doctrine, what she speaks of. So the Clintons, since before, with the United Nations, that's a puppet organization for the U.S., they had this man called Paul Collier, who's some kind of economics professor, devise a plan to get Haiti out of the condition that it's in. And their plan, Collier's plan, was nothing more than Caribbean Basin Initiative from Ronald Reagan garbage that says basically, you know, you have to take the land away from the peasants so that they don't feel that they can work and feed themselves, because the only thing that empire needs Haiti for is cheap labor. So this thing was not going anywhere. But once the earthquake happens, the Clintons jump in with both feet. The United States, you know, the UN, they jump in with both feet to make this happen, to create this reality. Because really, this is a country that 19 years of U.S. occupation could not get our people to play baseball. That's the trick, you know? Like, if you can get them to do that, like, you'll take them anywhere. But it didn't happen in Haiti. And two coup d'etats against President Aristide couldn't get them to do what they, to get us where they wanted to bring us. And finally, they get this earthquake. And the earthquake is the opportunity that they're going to do everything they want to do. And to do that, they needed to get in power a puppet, a completely submissive puppet government in the country. And so this is really what brings us here, where we are right now, where a lot of people, misguided people, felt that because Jovenel Moïse was doing everything that Donald Trump wanted, they thought that Donald Trump was Jovenel Moïse's puppet master. But in fact, it's the United States of America. And whoever is in power is who he will be subservient to. And so this is why Joe Biden, that a lot of Haitians, misguided Haitians, who over here ran to vote for Joe Biden because they thought he was going to be our savior.
Really? Even after the opening clip, for those of you guys that are just tuning in now that missed the opening clip, I tend
play it again, please.
Play it again. So Joe, give me a second. Help me out, Pascal. I gotta find it.
No, I mean, what I find interesting here that we're talking about, right, in terms of, you know, Jovenel Moïse, the current president. You said something that was very important.
Let's not call him president. The current puppet.
The current inhabitor of the chair, the puppet, if you will, the puppet of the people, is that, you know, in terms of the Trump administration, he was able to provide certain services or be beneficial to the Trump administration. I heard you in an earlier interview talking about how, relative to Venezuela, Jovenel Moise worked very well for the Trump administration in that regard. Can you elaborate in terms of how Jovenel Moise's administration helped facilitate some of the goals of the Trump administration?
Well, no, I think it was when the Trump administration decided to declare that Juan Guaido was the president of Venezuela. You know, just out of the blue, they pick someone, you know, and they say, this man is the president of Venezuela. Haitians everywhere were astounded to find that Jovenel Moise joined in this movement to say that Haiti recognizes Guaido as the president of Venezuela. And to understand what that means, you have to know, like I said, from 1805, there's a relationship between the movement that comes to create Gran Colombia in South America, you know, of which Venezuela, Simon Bolivar, is the lead person that the world knows of. Mm-hmm. Of course, with the support of Haiti. And throughout our history, there's been collaboration between Venezuela and Haiti. Haitian merchants travel regularly to buy goods in Venezuela to sell in Haiti. When there is a coup against President Aristide in September 1991, Venezuela is the first country that agrees to receive President Aristide. And President Aristide, we have to say, this is the first individual that was duly elected by a vast majority of the Haitian population. 67% of this vote, President Aristide won. And it's an election that happened with more than 80% of the electorate participating in this election. Imagine that. So when President Hugo Chavez in Venezuela comes to power, I don't know how I can say so much aid that Venezuela, Hugo Chavez has given to Haiti. The Petro-Caribe program in 2007, which is a program where countries get to buy fuel from Venezuela at a time when the price was very high in the world market at a reduced price. And from this reduced price, Venezuela agreed to have these countries, Haiti, in our example, pay half of the money up front, and the other half would be a 25-year loan at 1% interest. In our organizations, we've collaborated for years with the Cuban medical brigades in Haiti. People should know, during the entire reign of the Duvaliers, Haiti had no diplomatic relationship with Cuba. Mm. From the Dominican Republic, that's on the same island, next, the closest country to us is Cuba. When President Aristide is leaving power in 1995, he restores relationship with Cuba. And shortly thereafter, under President Preval's first term, you had the first Cuban brigades come to Haiti. And really, this is the first time that the poorest of the poor in Haiti have access to some kind of health care. But the Cubans had the manpower, but they did not have the means. They did not have the medication. They didn't have the vehicles. When, for example, they wanted to do this operation, miracle, it's called the free eye operations, for poor Haitians, free, completely free, they didn't have the means. They had the manpower, but they, well, Hugo Chavez, Venezuela, provided vehicles, provided money, provided resources to allow Cuba to provide healthcare to the Haitian people for free. And I have to say, they are Cuban doctors are still in Haiti today, though much less as they were at another time.
Now, didn't Chavez say that he did that for a big reason why is because the Haitian people initially helped out Simon Bolivar?
Absolutely. This is what, and this is something that President Chavez always says. He says, I'm not giving aid to Haiti. I am repaying a debt to Haiti. I should tell you also, Cuba's national hero is Jose Marti. Jose Marti died with a Haitian passport in his jacket. Why? Because for him to travel to fight for Cuba's independence to get resources, well, he needed a passport. But Spain, who was the colonial power at the time, of course, would not give him the means to do this passport. So he goes to Haiti, where for some time he lived in Cap-Haïtien, just as Simon Bolivar had lived in Jacmel. These houses are still there. And the government of Haiti at the time gives Jose Marti a Haitian passport. So, this is Donald Trump shithole, you know, like this is this is the country that our last name has become the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. But as you know, people who read, people who understand, they know that the historical value, the liberation value of Haiti. But so it was a great tragedy for us when this puppet, you know, that he betrays. And the funniest thing, I spoke about it in the other interview Brother Robert spoke about, is just like a couple of months before he does this, maybe 1 month, Jovenel Moïse travels to Venezuela to, in addition to all of this I'm talking about, to borrow millions of dollars to borrow this money from President Maduro, Nicolas Maduro, who gives him this money.
Mm-hmm.
And despite this, you know, for the pleasure of the United States, to show that he's a good slave, you know, and he betrays Venezuela for the United States.
Brother Daoud, I have a clip for you. I'm not going to tell you what this is. It is in line with what we are talking about. It is current. So to start the show, I played a clip of Joe Biden from 1994, literally saying he didn't really care if Haiti fell off into the ocean.
He said if Haiti sank to the bottom of the Caribbean Ocean or if it blew up 300 feet into the air, the United States wouldn't give a damn.
Wouldn't care. Wouldn't care. Brandon says, Jason and his clips. Yes. While we are not able to monetize the YouTube channel, I'm playing the shit out of these clips. So enjoy them now, because pretty soon I got to keep this stuff to a minimum. But I think this is right on. This is a clip of President Joe Biden, right? The adult in the room. Now it's all better because the orange man is gone. Everything you've heard so far for the last 49 minutes, this is a clip of Joe Biden campaigning in an area I've actually been to. I don't know how far Pascal is from this area. Little Haiti.
45 minutes.
Taking a knee. So,
keep an eye out when you watch the clip for Pascal walking by with his vote blue, no matter whose side. Just for saying that, he's going to slap the shit out of me.
Joe Biden tested negative again
today. He is campaigning here in South Florida.
And he met with supporters in Little Haiti and Little Havana before heading to Boca Raton. Local 10's Janine Stanwood is live now with more on the Vice President's Day today. Janine.
This is a presidential campaign like we have never seen. Joe Biden is right now inside Jose
Martí's
gym.
She looks like she's totally
gonna
tell on your
manager. Not a big crowd. There is one pool group that is actually getting the video and the audio that you are hearing. He's doing it because he's talking about the dangers of COVID-19. And in fact, just a short time ago, he talked about the importance of wearing a mask, even asking President Trump to call for a mask mandate. Take a listen.
Since the president entered the hospital on Friday, more than 100,000, since Friday, more than 100,000 more people have been diagnosed with COVID. I hope the president's recovery is swift and successful, but our nation's COVID crisis is far, far from over. Today, my prayers are with the families of the 210,000 Americans who died from the virus.
Again, Joe Biden is continuing to speak here at the Jose Martí Gym in Little Havana. This is actually his first campaign stop in South Florida since becoming the Democratic nominee. The roar of the motorcade and the arrival of presidential nominee Joe Biden to one of the most important battlegrounds in the country, South Florida, before a stop here in Little Havana.
Thank you all.
The former VP spoke outside in Little Haiti to a crowd wearing masks, where he said his commitment to Haitian Americans and temporary protected status is clear.
This is not the time to lift it.
So hold on, I'm gonna have to pause this for a second because now this, of course, is done before Joe Biden takes office, right? This is during the campaign trail. So let's remember that there's been quite a few deportations. This is literally antithetical to what is going on currently with Haitians and Cameroonians. And they're saying this was his first campaign stop. And he's talking about, you know, okay, I'm gonna shut up. But this is the current president, Joe Biden.
No quit in America. There's no quit in America. There's clearly no quit in the Haitian community.
Biden is also trying to gain ground with Hispanic voters. While Cuban Americans are reliably Republican, the voting bloc isn't one-sided, and the growing number of independent voters here might have a bigger say. South Florida, always so important in presidential elections. It just looks a little different this year, or should we say it looks a lot different this year. Again, the former vice president speaking here at the gym.
I mean, that's insane to me. That's insane that he felt so comfortable to go there after, and I'm sure he doesn't remember because he's a little cognitively gone at this point in his life, but someone in his campaign had to have told him, hey man, in 94, you kind of said some messed up stuff about Haitians. You should probably address that. Doesn't even address it.
I mean, the larger point is that this guy is talking about on the campaign trail that he's going to reestablish TPS, temporary protective status, for Haitians once upon being president. And currently, in less than 2 months in his administration, he's already deporting 21-month-old Haitian children. I mean, that what I would like, you know, I mean,
well,
I
wanted, you, actually,
babies. Sorry.
Yeah, actually, since the beginning of February, it's more than 500 Haitians that have been deported, and it's 12 flights have gone back, and this is despite the 100-day executive order to stop all deportations, and this is supposedly some technicality, some rule, that because of COVID, supposedly to protect the people and the refugees, people seeking some kind of asylum at the borders, the U.S. has been deporting. And it's 1,800 Haitians that are on his list to deport. And as Brother Jason said, lots of children and babies in this as well. Somebody in the, I think it's Sister Alice, who put up a note. This is, you know, the Build Back Better, that slogan that Joe Biden's campaign used in Black communities in the United States during the campaign. And it really made us laugh when we saw that. And it's like the same kind of font and everything that was used. And this is the slogan that the Clintons used. The same slogan that the Clintons used for Haiti after the earthquake. Bill Clinton was saying up and down that he's going to build back better. And I was like, wow, how can they do this? Like, the whole world saw what happened, what the Clintons did. You know, Bill Clinton in charge of this reconstruction money, $6 billion, you know, in Haiti. And for them to have the gall, you know, to use the same slogan to Black people in the United States to say that they're going to build back Haitian communities, they're going to build back better. I saw also someone else who had a note say, asking Joe Biden where is his $1,400. I have to tell that person, no, it's $2,000, you know. That's what won them Georgia, Democrats, because they said, you, these two Democratic senators, next week you will have your $2,000 checks. Yeah. So don't, it's $2,000, not $1,400.
I could use any of it at the moment.
I mean, what the important thing that we're learning here is that in terms of when it comes to the policies that we're actually seeing, as opposed to the campaign rhetoric, it's the bipartisan hammer of misery that's coming down on not only Haitians, but Americans as well, as we're slowly starting to learn. And that we have to really ask the question, all those Haitians that we saw in Little Haiti who believed that they were, that Joe Biden was being portrayed as their savior from the guy who called their country the shithole country, compared to the man who said their country could sink into the Caribbean Ocean. What exactly has that translated to in terms of real policy for America's relationship with Haiti? And what exactly does that mean in terms of those Haitians who have demanded that the Haitian electorate in the United States maintain its loyalty to the Democratic Party? And I'm not saying that they should have loyalty to the Republican Party either. As people know my politics, I'm not a fan of either of the two parties. But what I'd like to ask Brother Dawood Andre is that, do we have a similar situation in the Haitian community that we have, as Black Agenda Report talks about, do we have a Haitian misleadership class that is channeling Haitian voters in the United States to without question, unceremoniously just simply support Democrats without making sure that the demands or the best interests of their homeland are seen through? I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I don't think that the concern of course, yes, there is. It's the same. The Black misleadership class, it's Haitian, it's Jamaican American, it's, you know, it's all of it. You know, the people who are from these our countries who come here and they become U.S. citizen, like they are loyal to the United States and they follow the same policies as, you know, the traditional Black misleadership class. They are no different. And of course, what was strange is that our organization, COBOCODA, the Committee to Mobilize Against Dictatorship in Haiti, we carried on a campaign from 2014 to the election in 2016 to tell to stop the Clintons, to say that vote for a dog instead of voting for Hillary Clinton. That was, and we explained why. And we are among people who protested outside of Trump's buildings in Manhattan after he had placed ads in New York City newspapers asking for the death penalty against the young children, black children, who had been wrongly accused and wrongly incarcerated for abuse of a white Central Park jogger. You understand? So we know about Donald Trump. We know who he is, and we protested against him, you know, when other people didn't bother to do such a thing. But we said, even if it's Donald Trump, a real dog, who's running against Hillary Clinton, we asked our people to vote for Donald Trump. But at this time, you had these Haitian American politicians who we have this expression that they are more royal than the king, you know, who were saying, yeah, we are Democrats, and they were campaigning for Hillary Clinton. They were saying, yeah, focus on your needs over here in the United States, that, you know, forget about Haiti, because, you know, just focus on your well-being here. And we said, yeah, well, the history of the Clintons with black people in the United States is not that much better than their history with black people in Haiti. And so today it's the same thing, you know? And these are the same people who were pushing Joe Biden like he was some kind of savior for our people. And what we've always said is that we have to save ourselves, because the United States, whether it's a Democrat in power or a Republican in power, it's the same policy of genocide, of slavery, pillage, plunder, that has been since the inception of this country. You see? So no U.S. president is going to bring democracy or human rights in Haiti. You understand? And this is also, people over here have to understand that while you may feel that the policy of the United States, you're not involved in it, but it's the oil from Iraq, that from Libya, you know, that keeps the light on here while I'm here doing this interview, that keeps a standard of living that people over here wouldn't do without. But people have to understand that people who are being killed by U.S. drones all over the world, they are plotting and they are planning, and the first chance they get, you know, they have to fight back, because just as you would if you were in their position and being oppressed, being dominated by another power.
I mean, it's the sad reality that we have here is that many people are under the deception that the two-party electoral system provides some kind of solace for those people throughout the global South and the black and brown folk in the United States, where in reality they are two wings of the same vulture. And at the end of the day, both parties are agreeing to maintain the preeminence of American empire and ground, you know, what Fanon called the wretched of the earth to dust by any means necessary. And the question I want to ask you is that, what exactly is going on with the Haitian civil society in the country? And as a Haitian, we can speak candidly. We understand that one of the biggest obstacles to effective Haitian sovereignty are the class divisions and contradictions that exist in Haitian society. And you will find particularly Haitian middle class people who are like, oh, I supported. And we're talking about Haitian middle class who are as black as you and I, who will say, oh, I supported Jovenel Moise because his niece is not, you know, he's not Aristide, or his niece is not, you know, I supported Martelly. So I'd like you to speak to how the internal class divisions in Haitian society, as well as how it functions with the presence of the Haitian oligarchy, becomes an obstacle to an effective developing Haitian civil society, if you will.
Well, it's no different than over here or anyone else. You know, just like over here, you have the 1% who's running everything, who owns everything, while, you know, they say like 50% of the population is living on X amount of dollars per day. It's the same situation in Haiti, except that it, over here, you have a larger cushion, a larger what they call middle class. And in Haiti, you don't have that. You have just a handful of people with everything and just about everything, everybody else with nothing. That is the difference. Now, these people that the political class, what you're calling civil society, the opposition, political parties, you know, they don't really exist in the reality of the majority of the people in Haiti. We have to be candid and say that. They are looking out for their interests. Like, they want to make sure that if they're sick, they can get to Miami, or they can get to Dominican Republic, they can get to the United States with some kind of ease. But for the majority of the people, it matters that there's no functioning hospitals available for poor people in the capital of Haiti or in the major cities. One main hospital in the second city of the country, Cap-Haïtien, l'Hôpital Justinien. But if you have a serious injury, you need a serious operation, well, you're going to die. You understand? And so the people in the country, they cannot really count on the civil society or the political parties for their development, for the things they need to change the shithole reality that they are in. So basically, you know, you need, the program is called This Is Revolution. You need a revolution, like a real revolution in a place like Haiti, where we get rid of not just the people in power, but the political class that is practically, it's useless to the people. It changes nothing in their reality. And the demands that are being made, if you're following news in Haiti, from the political class, is basically just a kind of musical chairs thing. It's not something that is demanding to completely upturn the reality that poor people are living in Haiti.
Well, I want to ask you right now, we're about an hour in, and I don't know if Pascal, how long he told you we usually go with these shows. So are you down to talk a little longer, or do you have to go? I know it's a little later where you are.
About 20 more minutes I can do, yes.
Okay. Are you guys down for that in the chat? 20 more minutes?
So I want to address you, but you've made a very important statement here that I think is very, 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 as someone who has written about Haiti, who understands Haiti, is that you made the point that there are no trustworthy voices in Haitian civil society to truly address the needs of the people. Well, the question in us becomes then, when we see Haitians in the diaspora asking or depending or expecting the U.S. to intervene, who exactly is the U.S. going to use as a vehicle to implement its agenda in the country if we already know that we're dealing with a country in which the civil society is devoid of a consensus that could actually help the majority of the people? Doesn't that create a situation where you're saying that the only option is revolution or nothing? So are you saying is that, you know, the only option to change the situation in Haiti is actually revolution, because there is no way that traditional functioning politics, because of the situation in the country, can make change for the people on the ground?
Yeah, it cannot. And salvation for the Haitian people or for people all over the world cannot come from the United States or from, you know, the colonial powers, the people who are benefiting from the suffering of these people. You take a place like the Congo, where millions of Congolese, you know, have died and are dying every day, to bring coltan, you know, for the iPhones, the laptops we're using to make this kind of communication over here. So the United States is not going to decide one day that, you know, what they've been doing is wrong and that they're going to change their ways. They're going to stop, you know, sucking the world dry so that, you know, people around the world can live. You know, you had recently a coup in Bolivia because of lithium. The United States, you know, the major powers, you know, they are in a reality where they say, yeah, they need electric cars. They need, you know, another source for energy. And because Bolivia has a large tap of this resource, and because the government of Evo Morales that was in power at the time was someone who wanted the resources of the country to be used for the benefit of the people, they had to get rid of him. So now in Haiti, the politicians over here, Haitian American politicians over here, who are speaking about asking Joe Biden or asking the U.S. Congress, the State Department, to support the people struggling in Haiti, that is a farce. It will not happen because it cannot happen. How can you tell, you know, someone to not feed its what they feel is their what they want? And the United States, they want everything. They want everything. It's like there's a priest, Jean-Marie Vincent, who was assassinated before the return of President Aristide in 1994. And he's like, yeah. So imagine that a place like Haiti is sending beef to the United States in the 80s. Imagine that, you know? Imagine that, you know, we have mangoes. The United States wants the mangoes of Haiti. It needs the avocados from Mexico. And it needs it 24/7, 12 months a year. So they don't care what the Mexicans or what the Haitians are eating. So if it's just dry, just like plantains that remain for the people of Haiti, the United States wants that too. Just like we saw after the earthquake, like rich people like the Clintons, you know, they need to steal money from Haiti. At the same time, they're calling it the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. So the salvation of the Haitian people, it cannot come from Washington. It cannot come from Paris, from Ottawa. No, it's going to come from the Haitian people in Haiti and Haitian people and our supporters outside of Haiti who have some kind of conscience. You understand? And but unfortunately, a lot of the Haitians here, Haitian, who call themselves Haitian American politicians, their first interest is the United States, is securing their position in the United States. So the well-being of the people in Haiti, it's lip service to them. It means nothing to them, you see? And so that's why you had, after the earthquake, you know, Haitian American soldiers in the U.S. Army who went as among the 22,000 soldiers that Obama sent, pointing guns. That's why in the CIRH, you had a professional class of Haitian Americans doing the bidding of the United States, of the Clintons, at the CIRH in Haiti. For me, these are not people who are working on behalf of Haiti. These are people who, you know, they say that, you know, they're doing good in Haiti when they go, you know, they build a well to get some water, they build a little clinic, you know, or they build a small school. But that has nothing to do with the liberation, with the freedom, with the sovereignty of any country, or any country having the ability to define and to design for itself its path towards development.
Is China helping out Haiti at all? We had a question actually about assistance from other governments like China. Oh, you laugh.
Well, nobody's going to save us, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody's going to save us. As a matter of fact, you know that China has this policy that you cannot have relationship with China if you have relationship with Taiwan.
Haiti has a relationship with Taiwan.
But Taiwan bribes these governments around South America. You know, it's just a handful of countries right now who still have a relationship with Taiwan. And Haiti is one of them, because whatever the governments in Haiti want or need, you know, it gives it to them so it can have their support on an international level. A lot of people think that China is a salvation, or Russia, or anyone else. But no, that's not the lesson that our ancestors taught us. That's not what won us our freedom in 1804. Because every one of these countries, they were aligned against Haiti. And every country has the right to look out for their interests. You understand? So we understand that China, that Russia, that these places they have, but our ancestors taught us that what we need, we must build it, we must create it for ourselves. That is what makes you, able to stand on your own two feet. Haiti, to the displeasure of the puppets who are in power or seeking to be the puppets of empire, Haiti is not the Haitian people are not looking to swap masters. That's how I would answer.
That's a good one. There was a clip, I was actually looking for it just now and I couldn't find it. It was a little girl, and I forget why and what news source it was from. It was definitely a mainstream news source, but the little girl, I guess they were asking her about the U.S. coming in aid, and she went off in, was it Creole is the native language?
Yeah, she did. Yeah, I saw that video. She said, "This Creole. Is gonna come take our stuff."
Yeah, yeah. She was pretty much like, and she was a little girl, like a, you know, maybe 6 or 7, and she even had an understanding of basically when you people come here, you take our shit, and there's a documentary that came out maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. About kind of it takes place mostly in Haiti, and it's about Haiti almost being a nation of NGOs, and talking about how much the Haitian economy is actually hurt from these philanthropic efforts of the West. they went into like and years ago, back when Vice was still interesting before they had a channel. I think it was Vice magazine that did a expose on these Haitian clothes makers that made these beautiful suits. And this documentary kind of went into how a lot of these people don't even do anything anymore because there's so many
clothes.
Yeah, so many. Like, I don't think people understand how much. Why, as a person that's done a lot of traveling, and I've actually been in those Goodwill bins. They're called Goodwill bins. It's where a lot of the real fancy thrift stores get their stuff. It's these huge bins. When you go to certain ones, they have these closed off rooms where they send shipping containers to foreign countries. And you can't go in that room unless you have so much money because you're buying a shipping container worth of clothes. And that's usually where the good stuff is, whatever that is. And the only people you see in there are like, you know, people that look like us, you know, shipping stuff to their native country. And it's pretty interesting because I didn't really see that. And that documentary literally shows it, you know, a shipping container and shipping containers, you know, it's not singular. It's definitely plural of clothes, just devastating that handmade clothes economy that existed there at one point in time.
Yeah, actually, many of our countries that, and this is also the problem with diaspora communities who bring used cars, used refrigerators, used mattresses. Oh. It's like who have turned our countries into garbage dumps. Mm-hmm. For empires, like 20-year-old computers, you know, that the United States would need to to throw out in a certain way. But it's like a lot of us think that we're helping, you know. Whereas, exactly, it's destruction. And this is when also Bill Clinton, one of the things that during 2010 he apologized for is when the coup happened with President Aristide in 1991, people were saying, you know, you made the coup, return President Aristide to power. And of course, Bill Clinton returned Aristide to power, but under terms of the United States. And one of the conditions was exactly that Haiti is a main crop is rice, you know, like Haitians who can, they eat rice. We eat rice every day. So to protect the Haitian economy, there was a high tax, import tax, to protect the Haitian rice. So it was not profitable to bring rice from outside the country into the country. So Clinton demanded that President Aristide removed this import tariff. And that was done. And what happened is that, you know, the Haitian farmer couldn't produce rice anymore. It couldn't sell it for what it cost them to produce it. And till today, I have to tell you, they haven't, that we're talking since 1994 to today, that kind of market, rice market has not recovered. And Bill Clinton admitted in 2010 that, I'm sorry that I did this, but I did this to protect, for the benefit of Arkansas rice farmers. And, you know, it hurts me, but it's something that I have to live with every day. That's what he said.
And he's living just fine.
He's doing okay. He's doing fine because that didn't stop him from continuing to steal the resources of Haiti, you see? So how sorry was he really, you know?
That documentary starts off with that clip of him apologizing, which is almost like a forced apology when you watch it. It feels like there was, you don't see the pre-question to him, but it was some sort of press tour he was on. You said 2010, so I don't remember why he was doing this apology.
He was at the U.S. Congress testifying some kind of hearing they were doing. Yeah.
But he, I remember seeing it, and it starts off with that apology, and then it goes, you know, down the rabbit hole of like the Tom shoes, You know, you buy a pair of Tom shoes and there's some little barefoot Haitian. We're gonna put shoes on a barefoot Haitian because without us, they're just barefoot.
Yeah. As one of the comments here says, the Arkansas rice farmers, it's subsidized, you know? And so there's no way to compete with that because the U.S. government subsidizes it.
Everything. Everything. So we took you up another 20 minutes. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. It's been very informative on my end, being non-Haitian, and my understanding of Haiti is through whatever I can get out of Pascal and whatever I've read in U.S. biased publications. So thank you very much, Pascal.
Brother Daoud, merci frère pour tout faire pour nous et pour la communauté haïtienne aussi. You know, thank you for what you do for the community, and you know, and I appreciate you coming on our show and enlightening us into this history in terms of what's going on in Haiti.
Yeah, I want to, my last words for a brother, someone who made a comment about sovereignty, a sovereign country fighting for sovereignty. But the reality is that how many countries are really sovereign in this world that we're living in, you know, that can decide by themselves on their agenda and pursue that agenda without like a qual, you understand? And mm-hmm. So all of us countries around the world, I think, are fighting towards sovereignty. But I think even the United States is not as sovereign as it thinks it is. Because I remember I had a South African professor in college who was a prisoner at Robben Island along with Mandela. And he used to say that's Professor Ernest Dubé, by the way. And he said that just as the prisoners at Robben Island were in jail, so were the prison guards. So yeah. The United States itself, you know, is not as free. And the people of the United States, they are living through and the same things, you know, the fraudulent elections that I speak of in Haiti is the same thing that happens here as well at every level, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think that is, people have to keep that in mind, and that we're all in this project for life together. And the more of us invest more of our time, more of our resources towards the end of liberation for the planet, you know, not for any, because when Haiti became independent in 1804, it was all alone among slave-owning countries. You understand? Mm-hmm. So yeah, of course they were going to suffocate it. They were going to do everything to crush the project, to destroy it. And that's what they're doing. But they have not completely succeeded because Haitians are resisting, are continuing to resist. Even outside of Haiti, us that are here, Pascal, who writes on Haiti, who speaks on Haiti, you know, who are struggling however we can, it's furthering that project and to continuing to be a beacon for, you know, real freedom, not sham, you know, puppet, like, you know, a facade of a democracy when everyone knows, you know, what the game is. So that's the last message I want to leave with family. And thank you guys for the time.
That's a hell of a message, brother. You left on a big note. We got to just, I got to shut the hell up now. You damn done it. Have a good night, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Much damn, that was a good one, man. I'm glad we did this. Pascal and I've been talking about trying to do a Haiti episode for a while. Kiskiosity actually said that check out Brother Andre on the Gray Zone. So yeah, please go to the Gray Zone. They have a YouTube channel. I think it's youtube.com, the Gray Zone. Aaron Mate has about a 46-minute interview. You're going to hear probably some of the same things, but because, you know, but Mate is a little different. He had some different things he wanted to cover. Aaron Mate also, shout out to the Gray Zone, retweeted this episode. So thank you, Brother Aaron Mate. Anything you want to say on the way out, Pascal?
I really appreciate this, our ability to really bring these facts out to someone who had a very, very radical, transformative view of what needs to be done in Haiti. I think Brother Dawood Andre gave a great example for all of us who are, you know, trying to figure out what's going on in this current world where the 1% is trying to suck the blood dry of the majority of people in these conditions. It also makes us think a lot about what are we facing with this Biden administration, you know, in the light of what he said and what he's supposed to do.
That's why anyone's going to go back and watch this show, I open the show with Joe Biden's literally saying Haiti can fall in the ocean. Fuck them. And then not a quote. And then also this him on the campaign trail just a few months ago in Little Havana or Little Haiti in South Florida, you know, a whole different tune trying to play to a Haitian audience after, you know, but before he had said something quite the opposite of what he was saying about Haitian protective status, which we see right now. There was an article, I don't know where it was in. I know Democracy Now! Is the only place I've really seen the story be run about all these Haitians and Cameroonians being deported. The story is that it's ICE is gone rogue. And Joe Biden can't control ICE. It's just too quick and strong. So hopefully we'll get some more information about that. Saturday, we will be doing this 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Noon Eastern Standard Time.
Noon Pascal time is what I like to call it. Pascal time. We're going to have Margaret Kimberly, from Black Agenda Report, also author of the book Prejudicial. We're going to be talking about her book and the current administration. We'll probably even talk a little bit of China with Margaret. We'll definitely talk a little bit more about Judas and the Black Messiah with Margaret. For you guys that tuned into that episode, thank you very much for tuning into that. And we're also going to have Marcus from the Left Flank Vets on the show to talk about this as well.
Someone asked when we normally do our streams. We have our live streams on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday afternoon at noon Eastern Standard Time. It's Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And on Saturday, noon is when we do our streams, unless we have any special segments that we might be doing. So we're trying to bring you that content that makes you, you know, challenge the status quo and keep your mind on trying to find a solution to the situation we're all in here.
And we also have the audio podcast that comes on every Wednesday and Sunday. So wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, SoundCloud, Pandora, whatever I missed, it's there. Sometimes the guests are a little different. The episode right now is our conversation with a former Black Panther, formerly incarcerated, 43 years, Eddie Conway, is the current episode right now. Check it out. That was a really good one. We talk, of course, the Black Panthers, and we also talk how he views modern day Black Lives Matter in that same context. What else do we have to plug? Tuesday, we got Jean Bajelan and Cuba's coming back. I think we're going to talk the military industrial complex, like have a deep dive into actually how it works. People say it a lot, but actually how that motherfucker works from a motherfucker that literally was inside it. Does that sound cool to you, Pascal?
Sounds good to me, brother.
All right. Thank you, guys. And I'm going to leave with a clip because, again, I'm going to keep playing these clips till they stop, till we monetize this channel. And this is a clip actually from an Al Jazeera story about, I think it's called Haiti is a Nation of NGOs. And it came out around the time that the story broke of the Oxfam plundering of Haiti. So here it is. Thank you, guys. I appreciate everybody for checking this out. Shout out to my mom, who I'll see tomorrow in the morning. Peace.
2010, just 24 hours after the earthquake. His ambulance disabled, we found Ralph Senecal treating as many victims as he could from the ruins of his collapsed paramedic clinic, losing victims throughout the night.
I have over 12. I have about six in the street. Some of them, the family took them to bury them.
A year after the disaster, the ambulance service is back on its feet, but only just. This is where Ralph's ambulance was parked when the building collapsed. Now, on the night we arrived, he was using it to treat the stream of victims arriving here with horrific injuries. A year later, it's hard to believe how little progress has been made. After receiving no NGO assistance or government funds, the damage caused 12 months ago still hasn't been repaired. Ralph has had to convert his own car into an emergency vehicle to pick up patients, purchasing new medical supplies on the street.
I know if that money went in to the Haitian government, nothing will get done. They say that to give it to all the organization, the international organization. This organization, they have no structure, no one is supervising them. So they do whatever they want to do.
Many of the millions raised for Haiti's recovery have gone to international NGOs, but the appearance of cholera has raised new questions about their capabilities. At this camp in Port-au-Prince, water is delivered untreated. More than 10 camp residents here have since become sick. Families are given chlorine tablets to purify 2 buckets of water a day, but residents say that's not enough.
They give us 12 tablets and it doesn't last the week. My family consumes 6 buckets of water a day, so it's not enough for us.
The NGO in charge of sanitation has spent less than a third of the $45 million it's raised for Haiti this year, but representatives say they're looking at the long term.
We have not spent all of it. We have enough funds to keep on working for the next few months. We plan to just continue distributing Aquatabs and soap and doing hygiene promotion at least until the end of March, and then we'll continue for as long as we can.
But during our visit, the aid workers were confronted by angry residents who said many families were having to drink untreated water. The clearest sign that the system's not working is that cholera continues to claim new victims, and Haitians are still burying their dead in unmarked graves a full year after the earthquake. Sebastian Walker, Al Jazeera, in Port-au-Prince, Haiti.